Agatha. Danbury House. Later that night.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
It was a delight.
Clearly a favourite of the Queen.
The lemonade was exquisite.
Such a beautiful home.
The Ton, old and new, were making their way from the ballroom to the front door. Agatha and her husband stood on the portico, bidding them farewell. The ball had been a triumph. Agatha had danced with the king.
The king!
The king had danced with the queen, and then he had danced with her. And no one else. Not even his mother. He could not have made his approval any clearer. The Danburys were officially royal favourites. Society was to be united. It was a new day in Britain. There were two victories that night. The first was loud, and everyone understood the implications. The way of the old Ton was over. Society would mix, and the colour of one's skin would no longer determine one's rank. But the second victory, that one was quiet, and it was hers. Agatha would never be able to share it with anyone, but she knew. She had done this. She had spoken truth to power. She had made Charlotte understand that she had responsibilities, that she could use her position as a young queen to change the world. Just as Agatha could use her position as a young queen's confidant. Agatha knew of no society or culture where women were afforded explicit power. They had to work behind the scenes, manipulate their men into thinking they came up with all the good ideas. Being a woman meant never getting the credit for one's accomplishments. But not for a queen. A queen could act. She could do. She could make things happen. Or could she? Agatha frowned. She'd asked the queen to unite society by attending the Danbury Ball. But what Charlotte had really done was get the king to attend the Danbury Ball. Agatha decided not to split hairs. She deserved to feel proud of her accomplishments, and she was certain that as Charlotte grew more comfortable in her new role, she would learn to exert her own power for good.
"Thank you again," the final guests said as they descended the front steps.
"Good night," Agatha called.
She and her husband moved back inside, where the entire staff waited in the front hall. The butler shut the door. Lord Danbury held up a hand. And everyone watched, breath held. He peered out the window, waiting for the last carriage to depart. And then, when it was clear no one would ever hear, he let out a whoop of joy. They all did. Danbury, Agatha, all the staff, they roared with happiness, united in their triumph.
"We are a success," Agatha said to her husband.
She could not remember ever seeing such a look of joy and pride on his face. She almost hugged him. He deserved this. For all his faults, and they were many, he deserved this moment of triumph. After a lifetime of slights and insults, he had been named a favourite of the king. He was finally the man he'd always felt himself to be. It was a beautiful thing.
"The king!" Herman crowed. "He personally wrote to the Ton to inform them he planned to attend. His favour could not have been more explicit."
"Indeed, it could not," Agatha said.
"Lord Ledger invited me on one of his hunts," Herman went on, "and the Duke of Ashbourne mentioned a house party."
"It is marvellous," Agatha said.
"All these things I have been waiting for. They needed only to see me."
"It is true."
"I am a success," Herman cheered. "Let us go and celebrate."
He grabbed Agatha's hand and pulled her toward the stairs. He was laughing with happiness, and Agatha wanted to laugh too, except that,
he clearly wanted her to lie with him, and that was the last thing she wanted to do just then.
But it was her job.
Just as Coral drew the baths and Mrs. Buckle baked the bread, Agatha had to lie with her husband and grow the occasional baby. It wasn't as bad as it used to be. For the most part, she'd grown accustomed to it. She sometimes even used the time to plot out her weekly tasks and correspondence. But it wasn't the way she wanted to celebrate the evening. She sighed as they entered her room. Danbury was very excited. Maybe he would not last long.
"Up you get," he said, patting her on her bottom.
"Of course, dearest," she said. "Let me just change into my nightgown first."
"No need. We shall do it in your royal gown," he crowed.
And thus, she found herself on her hands and knees on her bed, golden silk rucked up on her back. Danbury was having a fine time, thrusting back and forth. Agatha's mind was elsewhere, counting her dance partners. Let's see. First, there had been Lord Ledger, then the King, and then she'd dance with Danbury because no one but a husband was brave enough to follow the King. Then Lord Bute. Agatha suspected that Princess Augusta made that happen. Then Danbury's friend, Frederick Bassett. Then Lord Smythe Smith. Then Sir Peter Kenworthy. Then... that was odd. Her husband had stopped. "My lord?" She turned her head. She hadn't thought he was done, but she hadn't really been paying attention. "My lord, have you finished?" He was silent and heavy on her back. She twisted, struggling under the weight of him, and then he fell over, landing on the floor with a loud thud. "My lord?" she said again. But this time, it was barely a whisper. She crawled to the edge of the bed and looked down. "Herman?" But there was no reason to say his name. He was flat on his back, eyes wide open. Dead. Agatha swallowed. This was... she was... Carefully, she edged around her husband's body and gathered her dressing gown. She wasn't quite certain what she was meant to be feeling just then. She moved back to Lord Danbury and nudged him gently with her toe, just in case. He was still dead. Well, this changed everything. She looked ludicrous. Her purple dressing gown pulled over her ball gown, but nonetheless, she opened the door and poked her head out into the hall. Her maid, Coral, was waiting in a chair a few feet away.
"My lady," Coral said, rising to her feet. "I have had the upstairs footman bring up water for a bath."
Agatha nodded. This was their standard procedure. Coral had been with her since before her marriage. She knew that Lord Danbury's vigour often meant that Agatha needed a warm bath to soothe her skin.
"Thank you, Coral," Agatha said.
She cleared her throat.
"Ahem. You need not draw baths as often." "Nonsense, my lady. It is quite simple now that we have a full staff. Today I have even had the new housemaid press lavender oils. It smells divine, and I'm told it makes the skin less ashy."
"Coral?" Agatha said. Coral blinked. Agatha spoke slowly and clearly. "You need not draw baths as often." Coral's eyes went wide. She inched forward.
"My lady," she whispered, "we are done?"
Agatha stepped aside and allowed Coral to peer into the room.
"We are done."
Coral sucked in a breath, then held up a finger for silence. With a careful click, she closed the door. Agatha could hold it in no longer. She let out a tiny shriek of joy and threw her arms around the other woman. Together, they did a little dance, jumping up and down, then scooting to the side because, good heavens, Lord Danbury was still on the floor. And yes, this was undignified and probably amoral. But she was free. Agatha Danbury was finally free. Coral pulled back, her eyes shining.
Do you want to change first?
No, I think... Well, I suppose I should not have the dressing gown. Agatha allowed Coral to pull it off her shoulders and set it back in its place on a chair.
Are you ready? Coral asked.
I am, Agatha said. She was. She really was.
Good luck. I shall be back in my chair.
Agatha nodded and shut the door. She counted to three, giving Coral enough time to return to her post. And then she screamed. Good heavens, she had not known she could make such a sound.
Help! Help! Oh no, help!
The door flew open. Coral appeared to be in full panic.
Oh, my lady!
She yelled.
What has happened?
It is Lord Danbury, Agatha cried.
I think he is... No!
Coral exclaimed.
Oh no! My love! Agatha sobbed. Oh, my love!
The hall quickly filled with footmen and maids, most still in their evening uniforms.
Something has happened to Lord Danbury, Coral said. Henry, you fetch the doctor. Charlie, wake his valet. Do it now.
He is gone, Agatha wailed. My love is gone.
Coral turned back to the rest of the staff, still gathered in the hall.
Wait here. I must make sure everything is dignified for my lady, and then you can come and help.
She poked her head into the room and gave Agatha a look. Agatha sobbed anew.
We must remove you from the room, Coral said. You cannot remain here with his lordship's body.
No! No! I must stay with him. I must.
Come with me, my lady.
Coral took her arm and led her out, past all the servants, gazing upon her with compassion. Agatha felt a twinge of guilt at deceiving them all this way, but certain facades had to be upheld.
I shall take you to the guest room, Coral said.
What will become of me?
Agatha whimpered.
What will become of us? My children. My children.
Come, my lady, come. The others will see to the doctor when he arrives.
Agatha nodded tearfully, and she let Coral take her to a guest room.
I will fetch you something else to wear, Coral said, once Agatha was settled.
Yes.
Agatha was still in her golden gown. Herman had called it her royal gown. It was beautiful, exquisite, really, and it looked gorgeous on her. But she wasn't sure if she was ever going to wear quite that shade of gold again. She wanted to choose her own colours. She wanted to choose her own gowns. She wanted to choose her everything. Danbury House. Lord Danbury's study. Several hours later. Agatha had been wandering the house for nearly an hour. She wasn't sure why. Except that she wasn't tired, and she felt so odd, and it somehow seemed like she ought to look at her late husband's things. His relics. He had been a relic. But the house was new. Its walls held no memories. That was a good thing. It would be hers, not his. Never his. She touched the spines of his books. Had he ever read them? She could not remember seeing him read. The newspaper. He'd read the newspaper. The butler ironed the newspaper, then gave it to Lord Danbury. Agatha read it when he was through. After that, it went into the fire. Was there metaphor in that? There must be. But Agatha couldn't find it. Not right then, at least.
Lady Danbury?
Agatha looked to the doorway. Coral was there.
My lady, what are you doing here?
Nothing, Agatha said. Everything.
Can I do anything for you?
Coral asked. No, Agatha said. Then, wait.
Yes?
Nanny said the children went right to sleep. Dominic had a few questions, but that is to be expected. He is the oldest. Coral regarded Agatha with a kind expression.
Are you cold or hungry?
Agatha shook her head. They did not seem to feel much upset at the death of their father, which I suppose is not a surprise. Lord Danbury was a stranger to them. They saw him only a few times a month.
Coral seemed not to know what to say to this.
I can wake Charlie and have him light a fire. Or cook can prepare a cold plate. Or early breakfast.
Breakfast?
It is almost 4 o'clock in the morning, my lady.
Agatha's lips parted with surprise.
I did not realize. I am sorry.
Coral, please go back to bed.
I shall not leave you. It is not surprising that you should mourn him. He was your husband, even if...
Agatha's brows rose.
Perhaps some tea, Coral said. Instead of... What are you drinking?
Agatha looked down at the glass in her hand. Port wine. It is awful. But it is Lord Danbury's favourite.
Was his favourite.
She set it down. She did not want to drink it. Her hand was shaking.
Why was her hand shaking? She was not upset.
She would not miss him.
Why was her hand shaking?
My lady?
Coral sounded concerned. Agatha slid the glass a little farther away from her.
I was 3 when my parents promised me to him.
Did you know that?
Coral nodded.
3 years old. I do not think I fully understood how very small that is until last year, when Dominic turned 3. Promised to a man at that age.
What were they thinking?
Coral remained silent.
I was raised to be his wife, Agatha said, staring at the wall. I was taught that my favourite colour was gold, because his favourite colour was gold. I was told my favourite foods were his favourite foods.
I read only the books he liked. I learned his favourite songs on the pianoforte. I am drinking this port wine because it is his favourite, and therefore it must be mine.
She looked at Coral.
I do not like port wine.
No, my lady.
As many times as I dreamed and imagined and hoped and planned, I never thought what it would actually feel like to have him be gone, wiped from this earth. I was raised for him, and now I am new.
Agatha looked at the wine.
I am brand new, she said.
And I do not even know how to breathe air he does not exhale.
She turned, faced the door.
I think I will go to bed now. Of course, my lady.
Coral stepped aside to allow her to pass, but Agatha wasn't quite ready to move.
This world keeps changing, she said. That it does, my lady.
Agatha nodded and finally left. It was time to find her place in this new world. But first, sleep.
George. Buckingham House, the King's bedchamber. That same night. George would never be sure why he awakened in the middle of the night. A sound from outside the house, perhaps. The wind. A bird. Or maybe no reason at all. Who knew why a man's eyelids fluttered open while the moon still shone? All he knew was once he was awake. He was awake. He was, he realized, too happy to sleep. He was also hungry. He wanted... What did he want? anything but gruel. He would never eat that miserable slop again. Tomorrow, or was it today already? He would inform Dr. Monroe that they were through. He'd thought the doctor's unconventional treatments had been working, but now he could see that it had been Charlotte all along. She was the key to his health. She fed his happiness. She would be the making of him. Just look at what they had accomplished that evening at the Danbury Ball. Society was transformed. And it had been so easy. George had spent so much time bemoaning what it meant to be king that he'd forgotten what it meant to everyone else. It was an accident of birth. He'd said as much to Charlotte, and he'd meant it. But he could do good with that accident, with his new wife at his side to guide him, to help him. There was nothing he could not do. But first, he needed a snack. Careful not to wake Charlotte, he slipped from the bed, donned his dressing gown, and exited the room. He wasn't sure of the time. 2, 3 in the morning? Buckingham was asleep, and he saw no reason to wake anyone in his quest for a bite to eat. How difficult could it be to find a piece of bread and cheese? He knew where the kitchens were. He passed them each day on his way to Dr. Monroe's laboratory. Would he have known where to go at St. James's? Now there was an interesting question. He didn't think he'd ever been to the kitchens there. No matter. Buckingham was his home now, with Charlotte. This was what mattered. It was colder in the cellar, and he was regretting not having donned his slippers as he neared the kitchen. Why did feet get colder than the rest of one's body? It must be the distance from the heart. One's blood wasn't as warm when it reached the toes. He paused for a moment to rub one foot against the other, then stepped through the doorway, and he was not alone. Monroe, he said, stopping short just a step into the room.
What are you doing here?
Monroe looked up from a pot he was stirring on the stove.
Can't sleep, Your Majesty. No, just... Your insomnia does not surprise me,
Monroe cut in.
This is not the correct environment for you. We were making much more progress at Kew. I am not returning to Kew.
Monroe's mouth puckered with irritation.
I worry about the effects of this whole place. Since you moved to Buckingham, you have not been to the chair once. If we do not resume treatment soon, we risk losing everything we have accomplished.
We?
George almost laughed.
You and I, Doctor, have accomplished nothing. Anything accomplished for me has been the work of my bride. Her methods have done more for me than you and your chair ever could.
Methods?
Monroe scoffed.
Bah. She has no education, no learning. If Your Majesty thinks she helps you...
I know she does,
George interrupted. But there was no way Monroe would ever understand the redemptive power of joy. That evening, at the Danbury Ball, it had done more for George's soul than any ice bath or birch rod ever could.
Your Majesty forgets himself,
Monroe said testily.
You grow reckless. You give free rein to your most capricious urges.
George crossed his arms.
So does she.
My point exactly, Monroe muttered.
George walked slowly across the kitchen, trailing his fingers along a wooden counter.
When I was an infant, he mused, my colic was never just colic. My colic was a disaster. An ill omen, the potential ruin of England. When I was a boy, a refusal to eat my peas was the potential ruin of England. An incorrect sum at mathematics, the potential ruin of England. I have lived my entire life in terror of acting incorrectly because every incorrect action threatened the ruin of England. That terror nearly broke me. I found places to hide, my farms, my observatory.
He turned back to Monroe, his eyes hard.
My madness.
Monroe said nothing. George located a loaf of bread and tore off a piece.
I thought that terror was the price of being royal. But now...
He popped a chunk in his mouth and chewed, swallowed.
Now I have met a woman who is never terrified, who does as she pleases, breaks rules, courts scandal, commits unthinkable impertinences, and she is the most royal person I have ever known.
Monroe shrugged.
She will heal me.
George's voice grew sharp. He did not understand the doctor's lack of reaction. It unsettled him.
It is late, Your Majesty, Monroe said.
He took the spoon out of the pot, gave it a sniff, and then resumed his stirring.
You'll have to go back to bed. I am not free for treatment just now.
Good God, did the man never listen?
Perhaps I failed to speak clearly before, George said. You are no longer my doctor.
No? A pity.
Monroe kept stirring, seemingly unbothered.
Nevertheless, I remain the Queen's.
George froze.
What did you just say?
Monroe motioned to the bubbling concoction in the pot.
I am preparing this poultice for her right now.
George's arms began to tingle. A rushing, roaring sound echoed in his ears. His voice, when he found it, felt ripped from his throat.
Stay away from her.
Monroe smiled.
But, Your Majesty, she came to me.
She wouldn't, George said.
But Monroe was already talking over him.
She heard that the king's doctor was here, and apparently she figured she should not settle for anything less than the doctor to the king.
He looked up from his work.
Intelligent woman.
George ignored this little quip.
Why would she need a doctor?
Well, obviously. Because she is with child.
George's mouth began to shake, lips quivering, as if he had something to say. But there was only terror.
She was not sure, Monroe said.
His mouth smiled. His eyes did not.
But I am.
No,
George said.
No.
But why should you be so surprised? It is what you have been working toward, is it not?
Yes, no, not yet. He was not ready. Monroe sniffed at the spoon again.
Perfect.
He tapped the stem against the side of the pot, letting the errant drips fall back into the swirling mixture.
We shall apply this directly to her.
Well, you don't really want all the details, do you?
George took a step back. It was still black as pitch outside. The only light came from the lanterns he and Monroe had brought into the kitchen. The flickers cast sinister shadows onto the doctor's face. George could only wonder what they did to his own. Did he look scared, grotesque, insane? He felt all that and more.
He felt too much.
He felt much too much. He did not know what to do with it all.
A royal baby,
Dr. Monroe said.
Congratulations, Your Majesty. A joyous day for England.
Slowly, George backed out of the kitchen. He did not know what to say. He did not know how to think. This was good news. A baby. It must be good news.
Charlotte.
Charlotte with a baby. Charlotte with a baby with a doctor. Dr. Monroe. Dr. Monroe liked his chair and his ice baths, his birch rod and his straps. Charlotte with a baby. Charlotte with a baby with the doctor with the chair. No. Charlotte would not see Dr. Monroe. He would not allow it. There must be someone else, someone who did not know Charlotte. Charlotte was a star, a comet. She sparkled. She sparkled with the baby, with the doctor, with the chair.
He blinked. He was back in his room. How was he here? Had he walked? He did not remember walking. He looked at his bed. The headboard was red, red like love, red like blood. He looked at Charlotte. She was sleeping. She looked so peaceful. Did she know? Did she know she was pregnant? Did she know he was mad? Which was stronger, love or blood? Charlotte with the baby, with the doctor, with the... What was happening? This wasn't the same. Similar, but not the same. Where were the heavens? Where were the stars? Venus. Transit of Venus. He ran to the window, wrenched it open. Why were there clouds? He could not see. He was king. He commanded them to be gone. Venus. Where was Venus? He could calculate it. If he could find one star, he could find another. And then he could calculate Venus. Venus. Transit of Venus. Charlotte was a star. She sparkled. A pen. He needed a pen. Where was his pen? He ran to his desk. No pen, but he had charcoal. Why was there charcoal? He did not care. It didn't matter. He could use charcoal. He found an empty spot on the wall and began to write. Calculations, calculus, equations in balance. Transit of Venus, he said to himself. He wrote it too. Transit of Venus, 1769. 1 plus 7 plus 6 plus 9. He wrote. He calculated. He wrote more. George the farmer, farmer George, farmer king, finding Venus, need to get it right. Pictures. He needed pictures too. Geometry, angles. Isosceles obtuse, isosceles acute, 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 acute.
George?
It was her voice, but she was a star. She should not be able to talk. Transit of Venus, farmer king, George the farmer, that is not right.
George, what is going on?
Be quiet. You are a star. He scribbled, he wrote, he calculated. 1 plus 7 plus 6 plus 9.
George, you're scaring me.
Stop. No, I need to try. He added the numbers. They did not make sense. Farmer king, he reminded himself. Astronomer king, recalculate to find it. Transit of Venus, 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 Venus.
He looked at her. Who was she? She was a star. Why was she here?
I have to go, he told her. I need to see. Out into the hall, this way to the outside. He could see the sky there. He needed the sky.
Someone stepped in front of him.
Your Majesties, can I help?
George is working, the star said. Go back to your post. We will be fine.
He was not fine. He needed the sky. Which way to the sky? The sky, the sky, the heavens, Venus, transit of Venus. 1 plus 7 plus 6 plus 9. 1 plus 7 plus 6 plus 9. This way, then that way. So many twists and turns to go outside. It was not right. He should be free. He was a farmer. Farmer George. He belonged outside.
George?
It is cold, the star said. You have nothing on your feet.
His feet did not matter. 1 plus 7 plus 6 plus 9. He was almost there. 1 plus 7 plus 6 plus 9.
He threw open the door and sprinted into the night.
I see you, he yelled. He ran across the grass, faster, faster.
But the star kept chasing him. She sparkled like the sky, and she was quick.
I'm right here, she said. Don't worry.
You are not a star, he said.
He stared with wonder. He knew who she was. How had he missed it?
You are Venus.
I am Venus, she said. Yes, I am Venus.
I see you. Venus, my angel, I am here.
He reached for her, but she stepped away. Why? Why did Venus not want him?
Talk to me, he pleaded. Do not go. Talk to me. I knew you would come. I knew it. Venus, do not go. Do not go. Do not be afraid. It is me. Do you not know me?
He tore off his robe, bared his skin to the night.
Do you not see me?
Your Majesty,
someone yelled. George turned. It was a golden top. It looked hot The top was on fire. He should not touch it. Hot like the sun, burning like a star.
Your Majesty, the golden top said. I thought perhaps you would like to warm up. Do you remember? When we were small, hot tea or warm milk with sugar to make it sweet like dessert. We could go inside.
George shook his head. He was not cold.
It is Venus, he said, pointing to her. Do you see her?
I do, Your Majesty, the golden top said.
Say hello.
Hello, Venus, the golden top said.
Your Majesty. Farmer George!
George cried happily. He threw his arms out, stretched them toward the sky.
Astronomer George!
Astronomer George, let us cover you up with this.
George eyed him warily. What was the golden top holding? What was he trying to do?
No, I want Venus, he said.
He fainted to the side. The golden top would not get him. He was too fast.
Only Venus.
He looked at Venus and smiled brightly.
Hello, Venus.
George, Venus said. He stepped to the right. The golden top was still after him.
George,
Venus said again, louder this time.
Farmer George!
He stopped, looked at her.
I am Venus, she said.
I know. Hello, Venus. You are Venus.
Yes, and Venus is going inside. You need to come with me.
All right. He liked Venus. Venus sparkled. Venus was kind. But wasn't it strange that she was here in the garden? He looked at her curiously.
I thought you were in the sky.
I was in the sky, she said, laying a soft hand on his arm. But now I am going into Buckingham House. Won't you come with me? He looked at her, at the house, then at the golden top. Here, she said, and she put something over his shoulders. This will keep you warm.
It is cold, he said.
Come with me, she urged, and together they walked into the building.
Venus is indoors, he remarked. A planet, inside the house. So very odd.
It is very odd, Venus said. So very odd.
He turned around. The golden top was following them, but Venus did not seem to mind. He looked at her, then jerked his head behind them, just in case she had not noticed.
He is a friend, she said.
You are sure?
I am sure. Come, we are inside now. Venus is indoors, with you. She is with you.
Venus. He was with Venus.
He smiled.
Thank you, Venus.
She nodded, and for a moment he thought she might be crying. But no, that was not possible. Planets did not cry. It was just a sparkle, because Venus sparkled. Venus was inside, so very odd. But she was inside, with him.
Charlotte. Buckingham House. Moments later.
This way, Charlotte said, gently guiding George through the quiet halls of the palace.
Venus, he said, with a tired smile.
He looked like he might fall asleep on his feet.
He is heavy,
she said to Reynolds, who was hovering two steps behind. Reynolds immediately came forward and supported the king from the other side.
He is a golden top, George said.
Charlotte and Reynolds exchanged a look.
Golden tops are good, Charlotte said to George.
She didn't know what else to say.
They are kind.
I shouldn't touch it, George said.
He giggled.
But I will.
He reached out and patted Reynolds's hair. His shiny, golden hair. Charlotte finally understood.
It wasn't hot,
George said.
I thought it would be hot.
The blanket slipped from his shoulders, and Charlotte paused to push it back up. He was naked under the blanket, and they were in a very public hall in Buckingham House. It was the middle of the night, and no one seemed to be around, but still.
Brimsley has secured the area, Reynolds said.
Charlotte just looked at him. She had no idea what those words meant.
He is making sure no one comes to this part of the house. I told him to lock the servants in their quarters if necessary.
Oh, thank you, I suppose. Her words sounded a little bit dead, certainly blunted. It was strange. She should have been in a heightened state. She should have been filled with rage or worry or something hot and volatile. But instead, she felt as if she was sleepwalking, as if her mind and body had cleaved into two. Somehow her body knew what it had to do. Take the king back to his bedchamber, wash the dirt from his body, put him to bed. Her mind, though, it was somewhere else. It had questions.
How long? She asked Reynolds. Your Majesty.
How long has he been like this?
I could not say exactly, Your Majesty.
Charlotte would have hit him if she'd had the energy. And if she weren't holding up the king.
Could you say inexactly?
Some years, he admitted.
Is this typical? Tonight?
This was worse than usual,
Reynolds admitted. They had reached the king's bedchamber. George yawned.
I'm very tired, he said. We shall get you into bed soon enough, Reynolds assured him.
We need to wash him, Charlotte said, her voice still heavy and dull.
Yes, Reynolds agreed. Can you stay with him while I fetch some soap and water?
Charlotte nodded. Whatever devil had possessed George, making him run and yell like a maniac, it was gone now, leaving a very tired man. He yawned again, and she and Reynolds supported him as he sank gently to the floor. They leaned him against the wall, the one now covered with his charcoal scribblings, and he closed his eyes.
Is he sleeping?
Charlotte asked. It looked as if he was sleeping, but what did she know? She'd never seen a man act as her husband had that night. For all she knew, sleep was no longer sleep.
I believe so, Reynolds said. It is common for him to be very tired after...
She looked at him, daring him to say it, to call it what it was.
I will get soap and water, he said.
Do. Reynolds departed, leaving Charlotte alone with George, who was still leaning against the wall with his eyes closed. He was mumbling, though. Nothing she could understand. She could not even make out the odd word here or there. It was as if he had been powered by fire, and the massive flame that had propelled him outside was now down to a flickery little ember. Exhausted, she sat by his side on the floor. He was twitching, so she took one of his hands in hers, hoping to steady him.
What is this, George? She said aloud.
He sighed.
Was this why you left me and went to Kew?
You didn't want me to see you like this. He mumbled, more nonsense. Charlotte closed her eyes, then shut them tight, squeezing a tear down her cheek. She was married to this man, and she liked him. She even loved him. Or did she? The George she loved, did he even exist? Was he just a piece of an unknowable whole? And if so, what size was that shard? What if just George, her George, was only a sliver? He talked of mathematics, very well. She could do sums and products and percentages too. What percent was her George. Would she get him half the time? Three quarters? Less?
What am I to do with you? She said, softly.
He didn't answer. She hadn't thought he would. There was a soft knock at the door, and Reynolds opened it without waiting for her response. He brought in a basin of water. Behind him, Brimsley carried towels. Charlotte stared at him. Had Brimsley known? Had he served her all these weeks, 5 paces away, and never told her that her husband was a madman? Brimsley swallowed uncomfortably.
If Your Majesty prefers to retire, Mr. Reynolds and I are perfectly capable.
Am I not permitted to wash the king? Charlotte demanded. Brimsley looked pained.
It is just not usual.
I confess I still have much to learn about palace procedure, Charlotte snapped. For instance, I just pulled the king out of a hole in the vegetable garden, where he was busy discoursing with the sky. Is that usual?
Brimsley did not reply, which was fortunate. Whatever he wanted to say, she did not want to hear it. Not tonight.
We will do it, Reynolds said to Brimsley. Just keep watch in the hall.
Of course, Brimsley said.
He stepped out, shutting the door behind him.
Concentric circles, Charlotte said.
Reynolds looked at her.
I beg your pardon?
We are concentric circles around the king. You and I, the closest. We wash his body. Then Brimsley, he guards the door. Then, well, I do not know who then. His mother, I suppose. Lord Bute, Earl Harcourt. I assume they all know.
They do, Your Majesty.
Charlotte dipped a towel in the basin. The water was warm, but not too hot. Gently she got to work on George's hands. Reynolds did his feet.
They all knew, Charlotte said. How they must have laughed at me.
No, Your Majesty, they did not.
And how would you know? I can see that you are close to the king, his most trusted confidant, most likely. But you do not attend government meetings. You do not have Parliament's ear.
Servants hear more than you would think, Your Majesty.
Charlotte let out a grim laugh. So it was you who laughed. The staff?
No,
Reynolds said. He turned to Charlotte with a fervent expression.
I never laughed at you. On the contrary, you are my greatest hope.
She looked at him. She could feel tears welling in her eyes, but she would not cry. She was the queen. She would not cry in front of this man.
You have done more for him than I could have ever dreamed, Reynolds said. You are good for him.
But is he good for me? It was a question she could never speak aloud.
St. James's Palace, the following morning. Charlotte had not slept. Once she and Reynolds manoeuvred the king onto his bed, she'd returned to her own bedchamber. She'd crawled under her quilts, her body wrapped in the softest of bedsheets, and she lay on her back, staring up at her canopy. At some point, her numbness had bled into despair, and at some point after that, the despair had given way to rage, which was where she was right now, enraged, on fire, and on her way to see Princess Augusta.
Your Majesty!
Charlotte strode down the hall, her boots making angry clacks with each step. Stop following me, Brimsley!
I beg you, this will not end well.
Charlotte whirled around, her expression so fierce, Brimsley stumbled back a step. This will not end well, you tell me. This will not end well, you tell me now. Where have you been all these weeks up to now? You say you are here to serve me.
You say you have pledged your life for my welfare, and yet you keep this secret.
I did not know, Your Majesty.
You did not know? Charlotte practically spat. She had seen him last night. I do not believe you.
I did not know,
Brimsley cried, and he reached out, almost as if he might grab her arm. But of course he did not.
I suspected,
he admitted.
Not this. I could never have suspected this. But I knew that something was being hidden. I tried to find out what. I swear to you I did.
I can understand this of her, Charlotte said, throwing her arm out in a violent motion toward Princess Augusta's sitting room. She is selfish. She cares only for the crown. But you were supposed to be on my side.
I am, Your Majesty.
Charlotte did not respond. She had already reached the sitting room. She barged in, without a care for decorum or protocol. Princess Augusta was taking her breakfast with a friend.
Charlotte?
Augusta smiled, with both surprise and affection.
I did not expect you. The Danbury ball was a triumph. Well done, my girl.
Charlotte could not listen to this. Has your highness ever tried cutting English mutton with a dull knife? Princess Augusta went quite still.
I beg your pardon?
The knives at Buckingham House used to be sharp enough. Then one day, they were all quite dull.
I'm sure I do not know what you mean.
It was the day the king joined me there. Charlotte fixed a placid expression on her face, waiting for Augusta to respond. Augusta turned to her companion.
I believe we may have to break our fast another morning, Lady Howe.
Lady Howe departed with all possible haste. Still, Augusta held a hand up until several seconds after the door had been closed behind her.
You were saying, Augusta said.
The knives, Charlotte reminded her. Suddenly dull. Odd, I thought, but surely a coincidence. Surely a coincidence, too, that the very same day the windows were sealed shut on the upper floors. I found that a little bothersome. I do like fresh air while I sleep. But suddenly, there were locks everywhere. Locks on the armory, in the kitchen, the shed where the gardeners keep their shears. A coincidence, surely. Charlotte stepped forward, her eyes narrowing as they cut into Augusta's. What I could not quite convince myself was a coincidence, though, was when the library set of Shakespeare was suddenly missing King Lear.
Forgive me, Princess Augusta said, stone-faced. I am not a Shakespeare enthusiast.
Are you not? Then let me educate you. King Lear is the one about the mad king.
Charlotte.
That was what set her over the edge. Augusta's patronizing, placating tone, as if Charlotte were imagining everything. As if Charlotte was stupid. As if she were the one who was losing her mind. Do you know what I have realized, Augusta? Augusta bristled visibly at Charlotte's use of her given name. I am living in a madhouse. She paced a few steps to the left, trying to control her emotions. She failed. Whirling around, she practically screamed, The king is mad, and I live in a madhouse.
You forget yourself, Augusta warned.
All this time I thought I was the damaged one, that somehow I was deficient, when he is...
The king is not mad,
Augusta hissed. In front of her, her hands froze into tight claws, as if she needed that moment, that tension, to steady herself.
The king is merely exhausted from holding the greatest nation in the world on his shoulders.
She said. Each word a precise clip of syllables and lies. Don't.
No, you don't,
Augusta snapped,
shoving her chair aside as she came to her feet. You come here as if you know everything. You do not. You are a child.
I am a pawn.
And perhaps you are.
What of it?
Are you going to complain?
You have been made Queen of Great Britain and Ireland. How dare you complain about that?
No one told me.
Who cares?
Augusta spat.
I certainly don't. What could you have known about it? What could you have understood? The weight of a nation on a boy's shoulders. The weight on his mother as she watches her son start to crack. If, God grant, you ever do bear an heir, then you may start to learn. And your first lesson will be this. You would do anything to stop the cracking. You would engage hideous doctors and their thousand disgusting treatments.
She looked Charlotte straight in the eye and said,
You would scour Europe for a queen grateful enough to aid him.
Charlotte flinched. She wished she had not. She wanted to be strong and proud and unfeeling. More than anything, she wanted to be unfeeling. Anything to not feel this.
You think the color of my skin makes me grateful, she said. I think you have changed the world.
I did not ask to change the world.
I did not ask for a son with rough edges. But that is what I have, and I will protect him with everything I am.
Rough edges? Charlotte echoed in disbelief. He was talking to the sky.
And what of it? You were nothing. You came from nowhere. Now you sit at the helm of the world. What matter is it if your husband has his peculiarities?
Peculiarities? You call this a peculiarity? Your Highness, you did not see him last night.
I have seen him before, Augusta said in a low voice.
He thinks I am Venus.
Then be Venus.
Charlotte shook her head, barely able to comprehend what she was hearing. I did not ask to sit at the helm of the world. I did not ask for a husband. But if I must have one, if I must leave my home, my family, my language, my life...
What, Charlotte?
Augusta asked. Her voice was oddly flat.
What?
It cannot be for a man I do not know. A man I am not allowed to know.
You know him now.
You fed me a lie.
And you ate it willingly.
Charlotte almost laughed. What did it matter now, if she had been willing or not? She was married to a king. There was no dissolving it. And she didn't know if she wanted to dissolve it. She just wanted...
What? What did she want?
Honesty? Truth? Trust? She wasn't going to get any of those things from Princess Augusta.
Tell me, Augusta said, are you with child?
I don't know, Charlotte lied. She was fairly certain she was. Dr. Monroe had certainly thought so.
You will tell me the moment you are sure, Augusta ordered.
I will tell you when I wish to tell you.
You will find that there is nothing to be gained by being obstinate for the sake of being obstinate.
Oh, I don't know about that, Charlotte muttered. The pinched expression on Augusta's face was the only bright spot of her morning. The only bright spot in her whole damned life. Neither woman saw the man standing in the hall just outside the sitting room. Neither heard his footsteps as he exited the palace and climbed back into the carriage that had brought him there from Buckingham House. And neither knew that he then travelled to Kew, where he found Dr. Monroe in his laboratory.
Your Majesty, the doctor said.
He had been packing his things. He had not expected to see the king. George walked across the room and sat down in the ghoulish chair.
Strap me back in,